The following program is brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations, and the views and opinions may not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of this station.
Today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, Southwest says you absolutely cannot bring your robot on the plane. And next time an older flyer tells you there used to be a lot more legroom on airplanes, believe them, because it's true. Those stories and more coming up next in the travel news.
In our Smarter Traveler segment at 11:22, we talk about online trip reviews. Are these influencers really giving you the truth, or are they swayed by the fact that the airline, hotel, or cruise line is letting them travel for free with the expectation of a good review? We'll dig into that and look at the truth next on the Travel Guys.
Are travel vendors pulling a fast one on you when you search for a hotel, an airfare, or other travel components? Are they keeping a book on your online searches to charge you more money? Chris Elliott joins us to discuss that issue at 11:35.
Finally, at 11:55, we tell you which state in our union has the most road rage and which one has the least, plus the most and least congested traffic cities, just in time for summer driving.
You could guess about which state has the most road rage all day and you wouldn't get it. How's that for a tease? Sharing information to make you a smarter traveler, we are the Travel Guys.
On the road again.
I've been everywhere, man.
Jamaica.
Solo Seattle.
Get your kicks on Route 66.
Let's go on with the show.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys, live and unfiltered, I might add.
Absolutely. Here
absolutely. Just in case you wondered. Thanks for coming along, my friends. Mark, how you doing? What kind of a week did you have? Anything new going on I should know about?
I'm just home for a week. I get to be home for another week, which is 2 weeks in a row. It doesn't happen very often, so I'm happy about that. You know, customer service has really taken a turn for the recorded phone tree. I mean, have you noticed almost no businesses answer their telephone anymore? I mean, even medium-sized businesses don't answer their phone. You get this, you know, please press 1 for this and 2 for this and 3 for this, which would all be fine if you pressed 2 and you got where you were going, but you don't often. You press 2, and then another phone tree pops up and says, well, if you need help with this, press 1. You need help with this, press 2. But what if the thing you need help with isn't on their list? Then what do?
I'll tell you what you do. What you do is whatever one seems like the one that would be the most urgent, okay? Like you're offline, or your air conditioning system has quit. Mm-hmm. Whatever one would be considered the biggest emergency. I used to deal with a company that provided us technical support for our broadcast equipment, digital delivery, and they were inundated with phone calls with people that needed help. But one of them was, if you're having an off-air emergency, press whatever button. Uh-huh. I would always go for the off-air emergency. Somebody would come on the air and they'd come on the phone and say, what's your off-air emergency? I says, I don't have one yet, but I think I'm about to. And that's where the smartest people in the food chain exist, is those with off-air emergencies, and I would get help. I would get help there. Yeah. Now that was heavily cheating. Yeah. But sometimes, like you say, if you pick the one that would appear to be the biggest emergency number, or keep repeating, go ahead.
Most likely to have a live person on the other end, or to your point that you're about to make, how many times can you say representative or agent? I believe that those bots are trained to ignore the first 42 times you say representative.
Probably.
And then, I mean, why would, do any of the people who buy and approve and set these up, do they ever have personal experiences where they're trying to get a hold of somebody online? Because you would think that if they had those experiences themselves, that those systems would be a little bit more user-friendly. Or at least, hey, you know, you played along with us in the game so far, so if this isn't working for you, press 7 now and we'll help you.
Yeah,
Just seems. I appreciate you listening, but the frustration, I'm sure in a few more years we will have an entire generation of people who doesn't expect to get a live person on the other end of the phone, that this will all be very normal. And my frustration just comes when I jump through a couple phone trees and they still haven't found a solution to my problem and they're not letting me talk to anybody. And at that time, I want to get the loaded pistol out of my, you know, desk and shoot the phone, even though I know that won't do any good.
Well, you know, a lot of companies, and yours included, has a phone system. Mm-hmm. And your phone system is designed to navigate your business and so forth. Of course, you have people answering the phones on a regular basis there at Sports Leisure Vacations. But if something goes wrong with that phone system, good luck calling somebody and getting somebody on the line to fix it.
Exactly. Good point. Good point. If your automated system isn't so automated anymore, who's going to really help you? All right. Anyway, enough of that. We probably should get on with the day's affairs.
Okay, the day's affairs, it's the travel and entertainment guys, and at the top of every program, we bring you up to date on the travel news. And with the latest travel news, once again, Mr. Mark Hoffman.
Southwest Airlines has banned all humanoid or animal-like robots from its flight. So you can't take... You can take a... apparently you can take a robot on the plane, but if it looks too human... or too animal-like, then you're not allowed to take it on the plane. The Dallas-based airline confirmed that these types of robots are now banned from both the cabin and the cargo hold, regardless of their size or intended use. The carrier defines a robot, a human-like robot, as any machine designed to imitate human appearance, movement, or behavior. Similar definitions were applied to animal-like robots.
Did you see the nightly news any time when our president was in China? Tom Yamas with NBC did an in-depth with all the robots that are being built there, humanoid robots that do all kinds of tasks and so forth, just thousands of them. And people will rent them and use them for services. So I'm thinking that this story is very much in line with what very well may be becoming is people who have personal robots to service, give you help, and maybe travel with you.
Well, and this came about, a flight was departing from Oakland was delayed while crew members determined how to secure a robot. While the airline initially treated their machine as a carry-on item that could not occupy a seat, The flight eventually proceeded after the robot was moved to a window seat and its battery was removed. The deal with this, is not what you might think. It has to do with the lithium batteries.
There you go.
That sure power enough. These things, and they don't want huge lithium batteries on the plane, and they certainly don't want them in the cargo hold because there have been numerous situations where those have either started smoking or caught on fire. So it's. They cite an instance here where a three and a half foot humanoid robot named Stewie, owned by a Dallas guy, came on the plane and was quite entertaining to people and stuff on board. And Southwest is saying that's not the point. The point is that it's a safety issue, and it goes back to all of this lithium battery stuff, and Southwest is not willing to go there. JetBlue and United have kind of become partners, and they have now expanded their partnership with new reciprocal elite perks. So if you are a premier flyer on United and you're flying the one JetBlue flight a day from here to New York City, then the overnight, then you can get many of your United perks will be available on JetBlue. And if you're a JetBlue perk person, many of your perks will be available on United flights. So that's if you are a United or JetBlue frequent flyer and you use the other airline also, look into this. Not all of the benefits are completely reciprocal, but there are some things there that you'll want to know about. If you're a 1K United flyer, you'll be treated a little bit more special at JetBlue. So good luck to you with that. The Oakland Airport, remember this, Tom, that they've been in a battle the last couple of years with San Francisco over using, they wanted to call it San Francisco Bay Airport, their airport in Oakland. And San Francisco was like, no, we don't think so. They finally came to an agreement. The two-year trademark battle ended when Oakland agreed itself to call itself Oakland San Francisco Bay Airport. So Oakland was trying to not, I think, have to say the word Oakland. and San Francisco was trying to have them not say the word San Francisco. So they put them both in there. And so that little argument is over. Here's a little announcement from TSA, which I found kind of interesting. TSA quietly updates its rules to allow medical marijuana. Now, American travelers can now fly with medical marijuana. This release says after the TSA quietly updated its rules on carrying the drug, although specific details remain unclear. Medical marijuana is now permitted in both carry-on and checked bags, subject to special instructions, according to the TSA website, which is updated without fanfare late last month. Now, I don't want to get anybody in any trouble, but I believe that on this radio program at some point in time, more than once, a TSA representative has said, look, we're not our job is not to find out if you have a small amount of weed in your carry-on bag. Our job is to make sure that you're not carrying a gun or something else that would cause a problem on the airplane. And if we stumble across it, then you may be subject to some law enforcement procedures. But if we don't, or we don't really care, I mean, that's not really our job, which I thought was an incredibly healthy way to look at it. So when I saw this thing about medical marijuana being now okay to fly with, I thought, well, gosh, you know, wasn't it kind of on the down low that this was kind of okay if you didn't show up, you know, in a cloud of smoke at TSA or something like that? So anyway, just FYI, apparently medical marijuana is okay with the TSA, and perhaps, don't have any firsthand experience, but perhaps it's okay otherwise too. Yes, sir.
I was going to say, are they going to require that you have a note from your doctor to determine that the marijuana that you have, or the THC or whatever, is for medical purposes? Because they're going to look the same.
Yeah. It doesn't have a label. You mean there's not a label on the side that says for medical purposes only?
Yeah, no. So you'd probably have to have a card of some sort.
That would be my guess.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Anyways. All right. How do you feel about, we talked about this last week. Our friends at Travelers United asked their readers, how do you feel about allowing passengers to make phone calls while in flight? This pretty much backs up what I think we already knew. 92% said, I hope the U.S. keeps their restrictions on in-flight phone calls. 6% said fine for short flights, but not for long or overnight flights. 2%, that would be one out of 50. But on a plane with 150 people on it, that would be three people, which would be enough, says they look forward to being able to make phone calls on planes. 92% against, 2% in favor. Look for the airlines to figure out a way to monetize that and roll it out very soon. New Zealand, we've talked about bunk beds or beds on airplanes and lie-flat beds in first class. Air New Zealand is the first airline to create a lie-flat bed in economy. And the way it works is, starting later this year, this has been 4 years in the making, Air New Zealand is taking out some seats in the middle in economy and putting triple-decked bunk beds in. So one level, two levels, three levels, and there's a little staircase that will get you up there. And they're 80 inches long. So that's,
6 feet?
Yeah, so that's 6 foot. Almost everybody except Kareem Abdul-Jabbar will fit in there. One person to a pod, obviously, and they're kind of open, so they're you don't have complete privacy. You know, the flight attendant could look in on you, so to speak. $495 for 4 hours on an Air New Zealand flight over the pond.
Now, that is including the seat that you sit in that you paid for.
That's right. You had to pay for the seat. Then you have to pay an extra $495 for this bed that you can lay in, right, which has, you know, semi-privacy and hypothetically is a little bit quieter because the other people who are in there are probably trying to get a little rest, too. Right now, they're only going to sell them once on a flight. But the idea is that on flights to the U.S., these could be sold three times. So they could monetize them three times over, and a flight attendant would be responsible for changing the bedding and the like. But kind of an interesting concept that people in steerage now can have the opportunity to have one of the benefits that people up front have. And let's face it, if you're on a 12, 13-hour flight to New Zealand from the United States, than from a West Coast city. You could break it up in the middle with 4 hours of sleep in something that resembled an actual bed. Might make the trip a little bit easier. I'm guessing that at $495, those are, wouldn't you think, those are going to be pretty popular?
I do. I absolutely do.
If you're spending...
a lot of people, that's one of the reasons they don't go to these countries, because you just can't put up with a 14-hour flight.
I would raise my hand for that. I went to New Zealand and Australia like 40 years ago on our very first trip over there. And God, they were beautiful countries and great people. And I would love to have, combining, it's always the big deal is whether or not you combine both trips and make one trip over there and do both countries, as opposed to going twice. This last year, for the first time ever, Sports Leisure did it with separate trips to the two countries, and they both sold for us, so that was good. Gave people a chance to stay. But boy, they're beautiful places to go, but God, that's a long ways. And then you get there, guess what? You have to get back somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you've got a boat and a good captain, why, you're going to get back on that airplane and come back over the pond again. And man, I'll tell you, that's a long ways. I'm going to Amsterdam and Belgium in a couple weeks and laying over in New York on the outbound, so it's not quite so far. It's only 7.5 hours to Europe from there. But even that, it's like yuck. Yuckarama. Anyways, enough of my personal problems here. International travelers view the U.S. more positively after visiting. This is a study published by U.S. Travel. They say that 83% of international visitors felt welcome during their time in the U.S., and 61% left with a more favorable opinion of our nation. The vast majority, 91%, were satisfied with their trip. Over half, 56%, reported an improved perception of U.S. safety. What I would interpret all of this is, we're not as bad as you thought we were.
And our public relations for the United States, for our country, and other countries must really suck.
Well, one would think, without getting too political here, one would think there are a lot of people on the planet who think less of us than they did a couple of years ago. That includes a whole bunch of Canadians who are not coming here in big numbers still. If somebody thought, well, that'll go for a year and then they'll forget about that. No, actually, fewer Canadians are coming this year than came last year. So they apparently have found. But anyways, what the survey says is that visitors who come here and meet our people and experience what we have to offer from a tourism standpoint here in the United States, by and large, are very happy that they have come here if they can get into the country. Let's see here. Oh, this is kind of cool. We got to wrap this up here pretty quickly. European, they have this rule in Europe called 261. It protects travelers in Europe the way that we're not protected here in the United States when there are cancellations, when airlines try to mess with you. So the airlines went to the European Union and said, hey, you know, we've cut a bunch of our flights, and their customers said, wait a minute, you can't, I'm flying in 2 weeks. You can't cut that flight. You owe me compensation if you cancel that flight. And the airline said, no. This is a fuel emergency. So we're cutting these flights because fuel is skyrocketing. This is an emergency, so we don't owe you. The European Union said, not so fast. If you violated these rules, this is not an emergency. You owe these people. So, gosh, wouldn't it be nice if we had something like that in this country? Because what it does is it makes them behave. If they know they're going to get caught misbehaving, then it's a lot easier to keep your name out of the news and just behave yourself. And that's what happens. So anyways, the airlines thought they were going to pull a fast one on European travelers, and not so much. I got a couple of other things here, but they'll keep. That's your travel news for today.
And we are Mark and Tom, the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Remember now, travelguysradio.com, links to our special guests and so much more can be found there. More to make you a smarter traveler just ahead. Live and in Uncensored Living Radio, Mark and Tom, the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Okay, we're going to talk about, reviews, trip reviews.
Yep.
And are they believable? Are they not? Who are they coming from? Are these people getting paid to say that stuff?
Aha. A lot of the people, a lot of the things that you, the number of influencers, you know, and I know this is a profession now. A lot of people make their living this way. But a lot of the influencers are not exactly objective when it comes to reviewing some of these products, because if you go to the grocery store and you're an influencer and you're trying to decide, you know, what are the best green beans, and you buy 10 cans of green beans and 10 frozen packages, and you come home, you fix them all, and you make a content out of that, and you say, you know, here's in my opinion, the best green beans. Well, you bought them all yourself. Nobody really had their finger on the scale or anything, so you're probably fairly creditable. I don't know how many people care, but at least it's a creditable review. When many of these travel people, what they do is they solicit from hotels, from cruise lines, from airlines, accommodations, upgraded accommodations, you know, first class seats, things like that, with the promise that, hey, I'll come there and, you know, here's the market that I'm in and here's the number of people who follow me and I can write a review. And of course, there isn't a hotel, an airline, or a cruise line on the planet that gives something to somebody for free with the expectation that they're going to come back and carve them a new one at the end of it. They expect that this is going to be, people are going to come back and tell everybody how wonderful they are. So is that really an objective? Tom, let me ask you. You've been in radio pretty much all of your life. And you've been at, before these were called influencers, they were called spokespeople. And, you know.
There you go.
You would go on, and I'm sure over the years, dozens, if not hundreds of people that you on various levels have been a spokesperson for. So
I don't know if I'd say hundreds, but yes.
Well, I mean, you, even if you weren't paid for it, I mean, you, over the course of being a radio guy, you know, you sit there and read this copy or that copy or whatever. Did you ever, were you ever in a position where somebody gave you something or with the expectation that you were going to, you know, whitewash whatever it was that you said on the radio for them?
Well, you know, no. And here's why. Because they refer to her as an endorsement. You're going to endorse a product on your radio show, you're doing it because the people who listen to you, and it's a little different than this influencer stuff, you know, you built an audience over maybe many years of talking to these people on a day in and day out basis, and they've grown to trust you.
Right.
So basically what I did, and I would think that most, but not all, broadcasters that are put in this situation follow these rules. You vet out the product, the company, you try it, you use it, and then determine whether you feel comfortable speaking on their behalf. Okay. And in fact, a lot of times nowadays with influencers, or better yet, endorsements, there might even be a disclaimer that says that so and so was paid for this announcement. Meaning that you're telling people right off the top that you either got cash enumeration or you got product or maybe a combination of both. And I would always start from the other end. Once I determined that it was something I believed in and trusted the product, then I would do the endorsement. But I've known a lot of people that would endorse anything that moved virtually without cause. You know, they say, well, I heard a lot of good things about them. They must be okay. And they just take the money and run.
So this is not something brand new. This is just has a different name on it and a little bit different venue, shall we say. The internet is a little bit different venue than talking to somebody over the air. But nonetheless, it still is a situation where someone is asking you to, as you said, endorse their product, tell other people that, hey, this is a good product. And many of these, and the reason I say this is because many of these influencers have been caught in this, have been caught in, well, you know, you wrote this wonderful review about this place that nobody else seems is worth a grain of salt. And why did you do that? Well, and ultimately it comes down to they didn't pay for the 5-night stay that they had at this luxury resort. And so they wrote a good review, even though all the people around them were not having a good time. So I just, and the point to all of this is, if you are looking for a place to stay, a place to fly, a place to cruise, whatever that has to do with tourism and travel, and don't put too much weight in what one person has to say, particularly if it's online. Look for other people who might have the same opinion. you know, if you read somebody an influencer's review, then go and see what the Yelp rating is, or go and see what people are saying online. And keep in mind, of course, that in some situations, some properties and some entities can pay to keep bad reviews off of their website. So that's another thing that you have to consider, is that, you know, you go in, sometimes you go in and you see on a scale of 1 to 10, this restaurant has a 6.8, and you say, wow, that's kind of mediocre. I wonder why that is. And then you go and read the reviews on their website, and they're all glowing, and they're like, well, how did that happen? I mean, there's got to be a reason. When a restaurant is below, if it's a 1 to 10, when somebody's below an 8.5, 9, there's usually a reason for it. It has something to do with the service, the quality of the food, the attitude of the help. And usually it's not something that just happened yesterday. It's something that permeated for a long time. So if you find yourself in a position where you're shopping and you're looking around, and I do this myself. I take groups of people to places. So I want to know, what do people who have already been there and experienced this, what did they think? And if you just rely on one review or one person, then I will suggest to you that you're doing yourself a disservice, because you have no way of knowing what the objectivity of that person was. Make sense?
It does. Be sure to look at the dates of when the reviews occurred. And if they go back 2 years, forget about it. Mark, we talk about it a lot on the show. You travel, you go places, and you're very, very upfront as to what you like and what you don't. Mm-hmm. So people listening to this show have to view you as an influencer, but it's real time influencing, and it's not influencing necessarily in a positive way or a negative way. It's just one man's opinion based on your experience, and I think people can appreciate that.
Well, and oftentimes it's not just my experience, but a group of people's experience. But again, you know, we're traveling as a tour group, so we have certain needs and requirements that may be entirely different from what a business traveler or a small group of people who are having a reception or some kind of an event at a hotel or another restaurant or another venue. So you have to take all those things into account too. But yes, what you hear on this program, by and large, is based on actual experience, and nobody pays us, good, bad, or otherwise, for whatever we say. Thanks for pointing that out, my friend.
Chris Elliott's going to join us, consumer advocate. We're going to talk about travel vendors pulling fast ones on us when we search for hotel and airfare, and much more when we return here with the Travel Guys.
We're going places with that sports leisure flair, a world of adventure, and we take you there.
It's just warming up for the summer, a long, warm summer ahead, but it won't be long when people will start thinking about the holidays. And to the early bird goes the best deal, not only at Sports Leisure Vacations, but anywhere else you're thinking of traveling for the holidays. At Sports Leisure, we have a number of packages that allow folks to get away and enjoy some holiday activities. You can go see the Rose Parade in Pasadena, or you can travel to a number of destinations for pre-Christmas activities. For a list of all of the holiday trips from Sports Leisure Vacations, visit us at sportsleisure.com or give us a call Monday through Friday at 916-361-2051. The travel company that actually answers its telephones, Sports Leisure Vacations.
Hey there, my friends. It's Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Remember now, links to our special guests can be found at TravelGuysRadio.com. Many, many miles away and hours away, day ahead of us or behind us, I don't know, I can't keep track. We're speaking with consumer advocate Christopher Elliott from Singapore. Christopher, welcome back to the Travel Guys.
Hello, it's very good to be back.
We are following you around the planet. I think this is about the third time that we've followed you around the planet, but, you know, we travel vicariously, Chris, through you. So I've just been out twice on old Route 66 a couple times in the last month here. And if you ever tire of traveling the planet and you want a slice of Americana, why then I highly recommend a trip down old Route 66. We have a couple of subjects here to yak at you about. But first, you have any update you want to share from Singapore? Is there anything that Americans should know about Singapore?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it's, I mean, we got here about 2 days ago, and this is my second trip, actually, to Singapore. Great place, very clean and modern, great mass transit system, and they are undergoing a big transition now from, in terms of tourism, being a luxury travel destination to being more of a sustainability destination. So there are a lot of hotels here that have these green initiatives and you know, sustainability programs, that sort of thing. So that's what I've been covering. Fascinating place. The food is really terrific. Like, if you are a foodie, you've got to come and see this place.
Wow.
Yeah.
And specifically local stuff, or does it have a real international flavor to it? What's the mix?
Well, I mean, the thing is that you have this great ethnic mix here of, you know, Chinese and Malay. So you have lots of different, and of course, there's a big British influence here too. So you have a lot of different cultures, and they all kind of have merged. So you go to these markets and malls, and you find just anything that you can think of. Lots of really great Chinese food, obviously, but Malaysian food, which most Americans don't know very much about. And Malaysian food is so delicious. They use a lot of spices and palm oil and, you know, noodles. It's just, please, guys, don't get me started. It's so good.
We will probably not recognize it when you tell us, but there might be listeners that do. What has been your favorite dish that you've run across there in Singapore that is special?
It's not really something that you would have for lunch. It's a dessert item called kui, and it's made out of rice. It's a very simple dish or a simple dessert, but the key ingredients are rice and sugar and coconut. And so I could just sit there and eat one after the other. They are so, so good. So if you go to, and they have them all throughout this region, so you can find them in Malaysia, in the Philippines as well. And so if you go, just don't forget to order dessert.
Excellent.
Got it. Thank you. Chris, we have a couple things we'd like to lay on your plate today. One that's kind of exploded in popularity here in recent weeks, particularly by online influencers have tackled this subject in many different ways. One lady claims that if you go to the library, you will always get an honest airfare / hotel / cruise line price, because the library computer has absolutely no idea who you are, what you've been searching, etc. Folks are concerned, consumers are concerned, that with all of the AI and the like, that I go online to an airline and I look up an airfare and I go back the next day and I look it up again, and now by the time I go back on day three, the airline knows that I'm interested in that ticket and that the people are suspicious that the fare could be affected by that interest and that it wouldn't have gone down, it would have gone up. What say you about that sort of situation happening?
Yeah, I mean, maybe we should take a step back and kind of define what we're talking about here. The technical term is surveillance pricing, and that is where you actually are looking for a price for an item, and, you know, a hotel room or an airfare, and somehow the hotel or the airline figures out who you are, and they usually raise the price. So they're watching you, and they can find out who you are through a variety of different things. Like, for example, if you log in and give them your loyalty program information, then they know exactly who you are. Or if you're logging in from a certain IP address or a certain country, then they can figure out who you are and say, oh, this person is more likely to want to pay more or less in some cases too, although you don't really hear very much about them charging you less. And so this surveillance pricing has gotten very controversial. It's not just for travel. It's also grocery stores are doing it, and there are some laws that are being considered right now, in particular in Maryland, that would ban surveillance pricing. So where things get a little bit confusing is that the actual product of travel, so definitely airfares, but also to some extent hotel rates, is it's a dynamic product and always has been. So you can go to a hotel website and look for a room, and it can be, you know, $200 now, and then at the end of the day, and it could be $195 possibly. And the airfares change even faster than that.
Yep.
Sometimes from 1 minute to the next, you can have an airfare that changes. So that's what we're up against right now. And the real question is, you know, what should travelers do about all that?
So what do we do about? And I should throw in, Chris, as a tour operator, it's not uncommon in my case to get an airline quote one day. And sometimes it will be good for a specific period of time if you get a formal quote. But if you just go on, when I'm online searching fares and the like, it's not uncommon for a fare to be different in the same day or the next day than it was the last time that I looked at it. Sometimes higher, sometimes lower. In my experience, more often higher than lower, but I don't know that that has anything to do with this. By the way, if you just tuned in, we're talking with Chris Elliott here with Tom Romano and Mark Hoffman on the Travel Guys. So, Chris, is this happening? You kind of talk like that it's actually happening. You relate that some JetBlue customers have filed a lawsuit against the airline. So When I listen to you, it kind of sounds like you're saying this is really happening. We just don't know how, when, and where.
Well, I mean, and again, I want to be careful to just separate the surveillance pricing from just what the pricing practices have traditionally been in travel. It's always been a dynamic pricing scenario. So people have always been very suspicious of that and have said, hey, Chris, you know, you got to stop this. They're changing their prices too often. It's not fair. This is a little bit different, though, because now we actually have some airlines that have gone on the record to say we want to do this. They call it custom pricing. And then about a month ago, you had this really interesting exchange on one of the social networks where someone said they weren't able to get a fare on JetBlue. And then JetBlue said, well, why don't you clear your cash? And for those of us who don't know what that means, it just basically means clearing all of the information that reveals who you are from your browser. So that a lot of people got very suspicious of that. And then a lawsuit has been filed against JetBlue alleging that they are doing surveillance pricing. And as a result of that social media post, so to answer your question, this has been going on for a long time. The airlines are getting smarter at it. Even the hotels are doing it. They're getting much smarter at it. They want to be able to serve you a customized price. They say it's good for you. But it's also very good for them, especially if they can figure out that you're willing to pay more money for a travel product. So I think that the real issue is for us as consumers is just to be aware that it's going on and to take some just practical steps to ensure that a travel company doesn't know too much about you. You know, one of the things you'd mentioned the library before, one of the things that you can do is you can ensure that you're not leaving too many breadcrumbs. So get a VPN, a virtual private network, and install it. And that way you can set your location and you can, you know, kind of pretend to be somewhere else and the airline won't know really who you are. So and then you also can clear your cookies. So or clear your cache to make sure that they're, you know, you're not inadvertently sharing too much information. And the biggest one, of course, is don't log in with your loyalty program information. If you do that, you're just telling them everything about you, and then they can serve you a price that they think that you're willing to pay.
So a VPN, which is a virtual private network, for those of us who are not aware, for anybody, if you don't know what that is, talk to somebody who does. They will know immediately what it is. It's a very, very simple thing. I actually have it on my telephone and am in the process of getting it on my laptop also. So you're saying never when you're going to united.com, never log in and look for an airfare. Go to united.com, look for the airfare as an anonymous person first. Am I following
right?
That right?
And then afterwards, yeah. Then if you want to log in and finish the transaction, then do that. But don't let them know when you're doing the search, because then they're going to follow everything that you're doing and they'll know.
Exactly. Okay. So, and you had one other thing there for that you suggested that we should do. The VPN.
Right. Yes, be careful. You know, just clear your cache frequently, clear your cookies. It's just basic internet hygiene. Because, you know, you're carrying around a lot of information. Even if you can go on under anonymous or incognito mode, that works the best.
Okay. Thank you. Tom, anything that you want to add there while we're talking about?
Yeah, it's good stuff. I have to agree with all that Chris put out there. Cookies are not something that you munch on when it comes to your computer. you got a lot of stuff there that's pretty easy to track. Good information there on surveillance pricing. Chris, let's talk about something else. Got a kind of a catchy name, but it's called Coupon Justice. Explain how that works and how do we deal with it?
Well, yeah, this is an issue that people have been dealing with for a while now, but there's a little twist that's happening this summer. So Coupon Justice basically is if you are staying somewhere or flying somewhere and the airline or hotel owes you some money or compensation, they will try to push a voucher into your hands as opposed to giving you cash, even if you are owed cash. And, let me be clear about this. If your flight is canceled, you're under the law, you are supposed to get a full refund immediately, you know, no delays. And airlines don't like giving you money, so they will try to give you a voucher. Famously, during the pandemic, the cruise lines gave people vouchers for 120%. They offered them of the value of the cruise and basically hoping that they would come back and sail with them. A lot of people accepted them. And the problem with that was that some of those vouchers expired.
So the thing is, the airlines, the hotels, et cetera, they know that a large percentage of these are not going to be used. Do you know what percentage of them are generally go unused?
Yeah, it's less than 10% of the ones that actually get used. So 90% of these vouchers don't get redeemed. And it's essentially a way of keeping your money.
Wow. But
this has been going on for a long time. It's not a new thing. What is new, though, is that this summer, of course, a lot of the travel companies are under even more pressure. Jet fuel prices are higher. This is especially true for, the energy costs that airlines are having to contend with, but also to a certain extent hotels. So they're under a lot more pressure at the front desk to offer you a voucher when something goes wrong. And a lot of people don't know what their rights are. The twist this summer is that you have in the United States a government that is not enforcing any of the rules. So the Department of Transportation is not going after airlines and saying, hey, you should have offered this person a refund. Instead, you offer them a voucher. It's the Wild West out there. And we're probably going to get another 3 years of that. That's not a political statement. It's just like the reality of it. And so this summer, you really are much likelier than maybe during any summer since the pandemic to have someone at the front desk try to give you a voucher, pressure you into taking it, tell you maybe even that it's the only option that you have. So you have to really be careful and know what your rights are.
And you have to be a little bit careful also. Now, one of the things that the airlines are doing is, you know, it used to be that a voucher, if you got it, was good for 6 months or a year from the date they issued it to you. Now the airlines are saying, well, okay, we'll give you a voucher that's good for a year, but it's good from the date you bought the ticket. And if you bought your ticket 6, 7, 8 months before you travel, you may only have a very limited amount of time to use that voucher. So that as a consumer, be very careful when you're taking a voucher that it's good for a period of time that is acceptable to you and that allows you to be able to use it. And then, of course, there are some situations, Chris, as we were talking, where you're not owed a cash refund and the airline, hotel, whomever is making a nice gesture by offering you a voucher and you should take it and not stand there and argue with them that it should be cash. So indeed, do your homework and know your rights before you get into one of those situations, so that if your flight is canceled, they owe you a refund. If the hotel is overbooked and they don't have a room for you and you have a confirmed reservation and you've paid for it, then they owe you a refund. But there are situations where perhaps they may not. So, and mm-hmm. to your point, if they know that when they issue you funny money, that only 10% of it is ever going to turn into real money, they have a huge incentive to issue you funny money and to incentivize their staff to do the same thing. So it really is buyer beware. And that old word that we use a lot around here of homework is really important. Before we let you go, anything else?
Yeah, I wouldn't want anyone to show up at the front desk and then get offered a voucher for maybe some kind of an inconvenience that didn't merit a full refund and say, "How dare you? I heard on the travel guys that you owe me money and I want my money right now." You don't want that.
No.
The homework that we were talking about is not that much. You just have to know when, a full refund is due and not. And then if not, then, the vouchers are actually a good thing. And you just have to remember that you need to redeem them within a certain amount of time because they will expire and then, you won't have anything.
Goodwill is nice, but money is always, you can't take that voucher across the street from the hotel to the restaurant and use it over there. But if the hotel gives you money, you can use it at the restaurant. Trust me. So in the meantime, Chris, you and the two young gentlemen who travel with you, your two sons, you guys be careful in Singapore. We'll catch up with you again in a few weeks.
You got it. Okay. Thanks.
Tom, one other suggestion that I thought of at post-interview is from the lead writer at NerdWallet. Says set up a price alert instead of trying to outsmart dynamic pricing. So Google allows you to do this. Some of the other travel websites do. If the price hits this level, let me know, and then I'm in. So that might be a way, especially with changing prices. Also, I want to remind folks that Chris Elliott has a website. You can tap into his wisdom all the time. You don't have to pay for it. If he has a subscription level, and you can get additional information and resources if you want to pay for it. But if you don't, Elliott2Ls2Ts.org will get you there, and then you can see what other options are available to you. But really, Chris Elliott's website should be part of your homework, because that's where you can get a lot of tips on things that will save you money and keep you out of trouble on the road.
And Chris is a super experienced consumer advocate. He and his people, if you've got a problem, whether it has to do with travel or that refrigerator that doesn't work, Chris and his people can help you out there too. Okay, as we promised, coming up, we're going to tell you which state in our union has the most road rage and which one has the least. Can you guess? That's next here on the Travel Guys. Yeah. All right, Mark and Tom, along with Anthony Lucas, our producer of the Travel Guys today. All right, back to business. We got some fun stuff here. This will be kind of fun. All right, Mark, what do you got?
Well, we got road rage and best and least cities for traffic congestion. And road rage, too. Good news and bad news. So what do you suppose the most road rage state is in the union?
Okay, how many guesses do I get?
You get one.
I get one,
yeah.
Okay. Well, I know when we talked about this before we went on the air, I took a guess, and you shot that one down, so we cheated. I already had one. Okay, let's see. I'm going with... I don't want to insult anybody that might be from this particular
state. We only have three
state.
Minutes here, so you might want to,
Okay. I'm going Oklahoma.
Oklahoma is the most road rage. Anthony, what do you think?
I think New York. They're all in the city, crammed,
Yeah, and based on my experience on the road recently, I would say Illinois just because of Chicago. But none of us are correct. The answer is Louisiana. Louisiana has the most. Yeah, well, the methodology... And here's something that you can't much argue with. Analyzing data on fatal crashes involving careless or reckless driving, violations for dangerous driving, and traffic incidents involving gun violence. Okay.
That's how
Louisiana made it to the top of the list, and not only once, but their second year in a row. Number two, I would not have picked either, New Mexico, because of its because of its comparatively high rate of traffic incidents involving gun violence, which is almost four times the national rate. Number three is Colorado. For the highest number of violations for aggressive or careless driving or speeding per 100,000 people. Arkansas and Montana round out the top five. What did it tell us here where the lowest road rage was? Hang on. I don't see that. But the least and most traffic congestion in the country. Cities with the least and most traffic congestion. Now, Anthony, this is where our New York City comes in. L.A. is number one for the worst traffic. Washington, D.C., New York, San Francisco, and Houston are also in the top five. And I would suggest to you that if you drive in Chicago, you're taking your life in your hands. Even if you're just driving down the street. People do strange things there. Five cities for the best traffic in the country. Rochester, New York, St. Louis. I was there on a Friday afternoon during rush hour twice, and it wasn't that busy, so I go with that. Oklahoma City, Tom, to your point, but on the other side, Hartford and Grand Rapids. Those are the cities with the least traffic congestion. But stay out of Oklahoma. I mean, stay out of Oklahoma. Stay out of Louisiana and New Mexico, because people apparently there will come after you with a gun if they get angry with you on the road.
Well, that's a wrap for today, my friends. Thanks for coming along. Mark, final word.
Final words. Dance like nobody's watching. We'll see you next Saturday at 11 o'clock.
He never has the time to turn around.